This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A decade ago, scientists finished sequencing the human genome, determining the genetic blueprint that resides in nearly every one of our body's trillions of cells. But that blueprint doesn't tell you a lot about what makes a neuron different from a liver cell, for example. Both cells have the same DNA, right? So why do they turn out so different? The key, where the real action happens, is in the proteins. And wouldn't it be nice to have a map of where all those proteins hang out? Well, it just so happens we're in luck, because this week, two groups of scientists presented their drafts of the Human Proteome, a catalog of the body's proteins, catalog there in the journal Nature. Kailash Pandey is a lead author on one of those papers. He's also a professor of genetic medicine, pathology, oncology, and biological chemistry at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Pandey.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Also joining us is David Pincus, a fellow at the Whitehead Institute in Cambridge, who is not involved in the study, but certainly knows a lot about the subject. Thank you for being with us today, David.
Hi, Ira. Thanks.
Let me ask you, Kailash, first, what is so important about this protein map?
Yes, what we have come to understand well and what has been highlighted thus far is the genome sequence, as you talked about. And the genome itself represents the blueprint, which is a set of broad instructions for what genes could be or should be in a given location. Mm-hmm. And these genes, they make proteins. And again, as you pointed out, is the proteins that are the functional units in cells, and they do everything in a cell, and that's why we think of them as workhorses.
Mm. How many proteins are there in the body?
Yes, the exact number of proteins is still being debated. That's because proteins can exist in many forms, but what we know is that they are encoded by about 20,000 or so genes in our genome, because there are so many variants or versions of these proteins that are modified versions of what is spelled out by the genome. They are in the tens of thousands to tens of millions range. There are that many different species of proteins.
So in our cells, there are thousands and thousands of proteins floating around on the surfaces everywhere?
That is correct.
Wow. How long did it take you to do this, Dr. Pandey?
Yes, our human protein map is the single largest proteomic data set of normal fetal and adult organs and tissues and immune cells. And this was made possible by a unique collaboration, that's an international collaboration, between my lab at Johns Hopkins and scientists at the Institute of Bioinformatics in Bangalore in India, which is a nonprofit research institute that I founded 12 years ago. This entire effort took almost 2.5 years, which includes the time for sample collection, sample processing, mass spectrometry, and quite laborious and unique data analysis pipeline. Mm.
David Pincus, one of the things you study is protein folding. Now, tell us how, I know it's very important, how a protein folds and unfolds, right?
Yeah, that's right. So in addition to just what proteins there are in the cell, in order for these proteins to carry out their functions, they have to actually be folded up into a unique shape. So every protein, for instance, an enzyme that's secreted to help you digest food, can only work once it's actually folded up properly. So this is a very important problem that actually we study quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is it like inside a typical cell? Is it just a big jumble of proteins, or is there a lot of room to swim around in there?
Like Dr. Pandey said, there are, you know, within any given cell, there may be up to 100 million protein molecules. And each of these cells, you know, is only at most a tenth of a millimeter. So it is extremely crowded, millions and millions of proteins. So we like to think of protein folding as sort of like doing gymnastics on a crowded street in New York. It's really complicated in a crowded place.
What could give us an idea of what could go wrong if a protein does not fold the right way?
So proteins don't fold spontaneously. They need a lot of help. So the way that cells help proteins fold is by using other molecules called chaperones. And these chaperones actually take an unfolded protein and fold it up into its particular shape. Now, a hallmark of many neurodegenerative diseases, for instance, Alzheimer's disease, is the accumulation of aggregated unfolded proteins. So one thing that can go wrong potentially when protein folding is not working properly is potentially neurodegenerative disease. Hmm. And on the other side, Cancer cells, which accumulate many, many mutations, rely very heavily on chaperones and protein folding in order to proliferate and grow. So cancer sort of hijacks protein folding, and it can, and when it goes wrong, you can have neurodegeneration.
Kailash, tell us how knowing the protein map, the proteome, is going to help us cure diseases or make people well.
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, we are very interested in mapping the normal human proteome because I feel, as someone who was trained in pathology, that before we try to understand disease or what is abnormal, we need to understand what is normal. And at this point, there's a lot of focus on analysis of diseased tissue, but until now, we didn't really have the building blocks of what is normal. Now that we have this map, we can actually make these comparisons to diseased tissue, including cancer, more readily. And also, as an example, as cells in a given organ get damaged in diseases, proteins from these damaged cells sort of leach out into the blood. And now that we have a catalog of organ-specific proteins, that means proteins that are generally restricted to a given organ, they could help us in developing diagnostic blood tests where when a patient walks in and the physician is not sure of which organ system has a pathology, instead of doing imaging and other kinds of studies to diagnose where something is going wrong, at least in the future, we have the option of doing blood tests or even urine tests that could pinpoint where the pathology may be for further investigation.
David Pincus, do we know why a protein does not fold or folds incorrectly?
Well, there are a lot of reasons why. So proteins can unfold with simple changes in the environment. For instance, if you raise the temperature, the protein is likely to unfold or denature. So for instance, when you fry an egg, when it goes from clear to white, that's proteins going from folded to aggregated and misfolded. So something as simple as raising the temperature can actually cause proteins to misfold. And then more complicated genetic reasons like mutations can also cause proteins to misfold.
So if you could develop a drug that increases or reduces protein folding, that might be a ticket to cure some of these things.
Right, but it could be a sort of whack-a-mole problem. You don't want to turn protein folding down all the way because then you might have lead to neurodegeneration. But you don't want to turn it up all the way, well, because you may prevent neurodegeneration, you may lead to cancer. So being able to subtly modulate protein folding and, you know, fine-tune it is really the what we're after in terms of clinical help.
Dr. Pandey, is there another layer you want to map beyond the proteome?
Yes, definitely. We now have a map of the building blocks of the protein. We want to now look at how these proteins are modified in cells. That's one layer. And we also want to try to map all of these proteins, not at the level of organs, but at the level of individual cells. So we want to create a cell map of the human body because right now we are not always able to tell which cell type, for example, in the kidney actually made the proteins that we are detecting because kidney or many of the organs that we have, they're composed of multiple cell types. And this level of resolution that we have now, we can call it a coarse level. And we really need a fine mapping at the level of cells, which is much more molecular.
Yeah, there's many more moving parts in the body and in the cells than we even think about. We have any idea, at least the general public does.
That is correct. And I think we are going to improve both biology and medicine only when we get down to knowing what these workhorses are doing at the organ level, at the cell level, but also within the microscopic parts of the level. For example, which part of a cell is it? And of course, as David pointed out very eloquently, whether the proteins are folded correctly or misfolded, or are they aggregating? And people are talking about diseases now. Some of the diseases, for example, neurodegenerative diseases as proteinopathies. These are diseases where we are not talking about the genome being mutated, but they are diseases at the level of protein or proteinopathies. And in the next decade or so, we are going to see this term gain a lot of ground.
Misfolded, badly folded, knowing right at the protein level instead of the genetic level.
That's correct. Right. And we need completely different technologies for that, mass spectrometry.
Could this be tied anyhow to the inflammation theory of disease, where we talk about diseases being caused by inflammation? Would proteins be involved in that?
Yes, of course. I think that is one of the hallmarks of, you know, inflammation. One is what cell types are there in a given location. That is how pathologists say that this region is inflamed. But then it is what those inflammatory cells make that decides the rest of the cascade. So all of the action at that point is happening, as you are suggesting, at the protein level. And we need to be looking at what the proteins are doing to be gaining a handle on how inflammation is working as inflammation alone, or in what circumstances inflammation can lead to diseases like cancer.
Dr. Pincus?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Inflammation is one of these things in the next decade we're going to learn much more about, and the causes and consequences aren't clear. But understanding what proteins are being expressed and how they're acting and functioning there is really the vital next step.
I hear both of you saying that protein research just doesn't get enough respect.
Well, thanks to Dr. Pandey's new methodologies, hopefully we'll be up there soon.
Would you agree, Dr. Pandey, that it doesn't get enough
these
respect?
These are not just limited to our lab, but definitely I think it has gotten less attention. And now I think, you know, people have been using the word post-genomic era with caution. But I think with the development of this draft map of the human proteome, I hope that people use that term a little more freely and talk a little more about proteins than just, I'm not saying that we can dispense with the genome, but we really need to think of the genome and the proteome.
So we should be using the word proteome more, as well as we're using the word genome more when we talk about curing diseases
and
understanding how the body works. All right. You've got it. You've got the attention today. So,
well, I hope you read our grants.
It's always about the money. We all know about that. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking time to be with us today. And good luck to you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ira.
Akhila Chaupandi is the lead author on that paper. He's also professor of genetic medicine, pathology, oncology, and biological chemistry at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore. David Pincus, a fellow at the Whitehead Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts.